The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome one,
and welcome all,
to the greatest show of them all, volume 114 of the NFC East mixtape, which you can listen to on any one of SB Nation's NFC East blog podcast networks. You can also watch this on the Blog on the Boys YouTube channel or the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel. He is Brandon Lee Gunn from BGN. I am RJ Ochoa from BTB. BLG, happy to see you. How are you? And I forgot to say this before we started recording. We actually have a meeting in 45 minutes, so this is going to be a really tight episode.
I thought it was in an hour and 45 minutes. I think I'm right, and I think you're wrong about that.
I think you're right, and I think I'm wrong. So we're good. We can go for an hour and 45 minutes if we want.
There we go. I did have something on my mind. It was about neighbor etiquette, RJ. How do you feel? So for the people who did not see, who are not watching on YouTube, I gave RJ and the people here a wave at the camera, which is prompting this question. How do you feel about neighbor etiquette as a whole, but specifically, like, if you see your neighbor, are you gonna wave to them, especially if you're driving by? What's the protocol there?
So I think, like, you know, I live in a neighborhood and we walk our dog a lot. You know, I walk the dog, my wife pushes the baby in the stroller, and so, you know, we're out a lot, you know what I'm saying? So, like, there is like a casual, like, hey, you know, how you doing? Like, if you're really close, I think there is an actual, like, how you doing? You know what I mean? But, like, nobody really answers that question. It's just like, right. Good. You know what I'm saying? I do think if you're, like, in the front or the back of the house, like, doing something, somebody drives by. I think the general rule is if you make eye contact, you got to give a slight wave. That's the general rule.
I agree with that. It's funny. We always, like, wave to our neighbors or back home, my parents. also, I'm not the biggest fan of the talk, though. Like, when like your neighbor comes over to talk, especially like when you're just getting home, it's like, I got home from somewhere. You don't know how long I was out. Like, I could have been out for like multiple hours and I need to like go back in my house and do stuff. It's one thing if you want to be like, hey, how's the weather? You know, like a 1 minute convo, but there has to be a time limit. It can't exceed like 1 minute. I feel like
there's a real cornering feeling to that because it's like, they know where you live. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's like, so yeah, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. We do have a review to get into if you're okay with that, if you'll allow it. We were delayed in starting this episode, and it would have only been 45 minutes if I had been right about the meeting, but I wasn't. But so we were delayed in starting because of you, because you were finishing lunch. You had a pizza, which I think is pretty on brand for you. This review is on the Blog of the Boys side of things, and it comes to us actually from Joe's Lunch. So Joe is a big fan of lunch. That's his username here. So it is titled NFC East Mixtape is Great. 5-star review. And for the record, if anybody wants to have the review read, we will read it. If you want to ask a question, you want to make a comment, whatever, go leave one on any one of the podcast networks and we'll totally get to it. Here we go. NFC's mixtape is great. Repeating the title. Like, that's also written in the review. It's not just the title. Also, shout out to RJ for powering through an episode while sick. I really was sick last week. Like, that was the beginning of it. And it lasted like 4 days. It was wild. But anyway, one of my favorite folk remedies. Boil water with garlic, lemon, skin on, cayenne, and honey. You probably won't like it, but neither does bacteria. Also, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, some Pennsylvania geography. Also, some Pennsylvania geography info. The Appalachian Mountains run diagonally southwest to northeast through PA. Philly and Harrisburg, home of the esteemed Mr. Parsons, are on the east side of the range, while Pittsburgh is on the west side. Mountains aren't very tall, but travel is difficult enough that there is pretty significant cultural slash accent difference. That's the review. Is that true in your experience?
I don't really know. I can't really speak to Harrisburg as much. I'm not from out that way. I will say, I was just thinking when you brought up Micah Parsons, is there a Micah Parsons curse? Because he wore the Tyrese Maxey jersey as a Sixers fan, and the Sixers lost. He wore the Phillies jersey, went to the Phillies game. He actually won the games they went to. But in the bigger picture, they didn't achieve the goal. Phillies lost the World Series. And then Micah Parsons was seen in Boston repping the Celtics, right, trying to distance himself very transparently so from the Sixers. And then the Celtics lost. So... And then the Cowboys don't win anything. So maybe there's some bad luck going on with Micah Parsons.
I will say I've learned, obviously know a great deal of information about Micah, but I've learned this offseason particularly, like everybody's calling Micah Drake with the like team hopping thing. It's, you know, it's kind of difficult to defuse that argument.
There's some of that,
but,
there, though.
Yeah.
Especially if you look back at his old tweets where he's like, what? My Warriors and my Lakers and my Heat or whatever.
He did have a tweet. Well, and then he obviously goes to a lot of Mavericks games. And so somebody was like, dude, you got to pick a team. And he did say a few weeks ago or something like that, that he, in a joke, like I think he's like leaning into the meme at this point, but he was like, next season I'm picking one team. So it remains to be seen which side will take his allegiance, Denver or Miami. Who knows? Jimmy Butler is a Dak Prescott fan, so maybe, you know, that's his in, but who knows? But I wanted to say on that, what I've learned about Micah is he is like, what I like about Micah a lot is he's just a big sports fan that happens to be an incredibly talented football player. So he's like obsessed with collecting jerseys. Like you said, he was, did he have a Phillies jersey? I don't remember on the set. That
he Pretty
was,
sure he did.
I'm sure he did. Right. That makes sense. So he has a Phillies jersey. He obviously has a Sixers jersey. He, in the moment that you're talking about in Boston, he was like asking Jason Tatum for a jersey. Who's very famously friends with Zeke Elliott. So he does have like these you know, little boys. It was a winner against Philadelphia, at least.
Jason, I mean, Taylor, like, just look at how he's played in big moments, and he hasn't really.
I mean, how did he play in Game 7 against
Philadelphia? I think that was more, I said this at the time, that was more about, like, Embiid and Harden not showing up than Tatum really,
He had the most points ever in a Game 7.
If Tatum was good at all, then that series would not have gone to a Game 7.
Anyway.
He was horrendous in that series until
in that video. In that video, Micah's like telling Tatum, he's like, I got to get that. I forget how he said it. He's like, I got to get that zero jersey. And Tatum's like, I got you. And then like 10 minutes later, Micah has a Tatum jersey on. And then I don't know if you saw this, but he was tweeting with Donovan Mitchell. And he was like,
losers here.
But he was like, oh, well, Donovan Mitchell's a Cowboys fan. So he's at least got that going here. But he was like, he said something like, oh, the one I have on my wall is your Utah one. I need that Cleveland jersey. Like, Micah's clearly a jersey collector. That's what I've learned over the course of this offseason so far.
I have a quick review to read from the Bleeding Green Nation podcast side of things. Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating review. This comes from username Mexican67, 5 stars, title, You Know What I Mean. And then the body goes on to say, on most shows, RJ throws in the phrase, quote unquote, you know what I mean. I'm often wondering exactly what he means. Can he elaborate more? P.S. Go Birds.
Well, you know, P.S. Go Birds. Or what was the name? Mexican 67?
Mexican 67.
You know what I mean. That's the whole, you know, it's a state of mind. You know what I mean.
You know what I think, I don't know if I've brought this up on the podcast before. You know that, like, people will say, it's like they always say, and then they say the phrase like that. But it's like, if you do know what they always say, then you wouldn't need to say the phrase. It would be like, well, you know what they say, and then nothing.
Yeah.
Because you know.
I think we're reaching a point of, like, just, like, average human intelligence where all these things are, like, annoying us now. So that's just where we're at, you know?
All right, let's get into the meat of today's show.
We're going to review the series finale of Succession. Brandon,
that's
what was your thoughts?
haven't watched it at all. I think HBO Max changing to Max is silly, as everyone else does, and that's all I've got.
I saw a meme, and then we can get into this, but so the app changed, and the meme was like somebody staring at their like screen, and it was like, you will have to download the new app, and like the caption said, I would rather sit in silence for 3 hours than download a new app and have to log in again. Like the process of logging in is so arduous. It really is.
I hate logging in. It's
I hate when you like the worst is when you have to type the information in with the controller. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? You got to like go do your whole email, and then like some you know digital keyboards have the like, you know, at Gmail, at Hotmail, at Yahoo. You know what I'm saying? Like they can fill that part in. Then you got to like do the shift or whatever, find the symbols, like, and then if you made a typo, like it's just it takes. You know, I just wanted to watch a show. It's really
or like the. Kind of some stuff we have at Vox, like the two-factor authentication stuff sometimes where I have to like, so I enter my password and then it's like, oh, now I have to go onto my phone, which, you know, might not be right nearby. It's charging somewhere. And then I have to like pull up the app and pull up the code and type it in quickly because they expire, you know, part of the safety measure. So yeah, we reached the, we're just complaining about stuff portion of the podcast early.
PSA for the two-factor people, because people use it for different things. Sure. I learned this lesson the hard way. I think you remember. I got locked out of my Instagram and Facebook account because I got a new phone. And you like the authenticator app is not something you like log into. Like the app is tied to your phone. So you have to be like, if you're going to get a new phone, be very careful to log into the authenticator or whatever before you erase the old phone. That was my mistake. And it took, we had to get some people involved. Shout out to I won't say anonymous, but the ever present Morgan. Morgan's the best.
I know someone who works at Meta if you ever need help in the future. So
Mark, is it Mark?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. We are going to keep it NFC East mixtapey here. And this is the bullish episode. That's what the title is. I famously learned what that word meant while on an episode of the NFC East mixtape. Cause I thought bullish meant the opposite of bullish. You taught me, Brandon. Thank you so much. My very good friend. That bullish means when you are high on something. So the opposite of how you feel about the new Max app. You are in. You are a believer. You see the truth, and the truth is a positive thing here. Basically, Micah Parsons is bullish on every team in the NBA, it feels like. So that being said, we are going to discuss reasons why we are bullish on every team in the NFC East. And that means next week, Brandon, will be
bearish.
Yeah, which is the opposite, which is what we just
said. But we're not going to talk about the Chicago Bears, even though I am bearish on the Bears.
Or my dog Bear, who was very loud before we started recording.
Thankfully, yeah, I'm not bearish on Bear either.
Good. So, okay. I'm not either. His Bear's birthday actually is Sunday.
Happy birthday, pal.
Thank you very much.
Let him know I said that.
I think this is a good launching point. Recently, Bill Barnwell wrote at the Worldwide Leader about, you know, he ranked, I guess is maybe the best way to put it, off seasons, right? Like the best off seasons to the worst, like versus like based on like how they improved or whatever. It was an interesting exercise. Three teams in the NFC East were in the top four. So 75% of the top four was the NFC East. And it was not the 75% that was a part of the divisional round last year on the NFC side of things. This isn't the order we're going in, obviously, but just to kind of, you know, I guess set the stage, number one was the Washington Commanders. And, you know, Barnwell even mentioned that this is really about the change in ownership.
Yeah, but it's true. I saw that at first and I'm like, wait, what? And I was like, oh, yeah, duh. That's true.
The line that I think is notable here is all of this is about what happened. Oh, no, hang on. I glossed past the line. You can make a reasonable case that no team made a more significant move to aid their chances of becoming a Super Bowl contender this offseason than the Commanders did by beginning to extricate themselves from their disastrous ownership group. It truly is the like example of like the bar is so low. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that like, the length in which they have cleared the bar is the biggest because their bar was lower than any team in the NFL.
I don't think it's arguable. It's like, again, they had with Dan Snyder, it's as simple as we've said many times before with Dan Snyder, they had like 0% chance of ever having sustained success. With any other owner, they have a non-zero chance. So that's automatically a big upgrade.
Winning percentage prior to Dan Snyder in basically the Super Bowl era, 58%. With Dan Snyder, 43%. They had 16 playoff wins before Dan Snyder. They have two in the Dan Snyder era. No MVPs, no Super Bowl wins, obviously. Not even a single MVP vote. They had 98 MVP votes prior to Dan Snyder. Again, we say this all the time because I know we have some younger listeners. Like, there was a time where, like, Washington was, like this bad team. Like, bad, like, the good bad. Like it was a difficult thing when your team had to play them. They were a force to be reckoned with, and that hasn't been the case for a long time, obviously.
their ceiling with Dan Snyder was like a playoff win, maybe. In a like a, you could have a good year here and there, sure, but you were never going to be able to actually win a championship or, again, have any kind of sustained run of success.
Number three on his list. Number two was the Miami Dolphins. That was the non-NFC East team. And I do think they are kind of like hiding a little bit in plain sight, even though they're like at every Heat game. It feels like so. We'll see a lot of them in the coming weeks. But number three was the Cowboys. And a big reason why was the acquisitions of Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks. I do want to discuss what he said when we get to the Cowboys, but just laying this out. And number four was the Eagles. The Giants were all the way down at 29, which is really insane. When you consider that I'm less bearish on Daniel Jones than you and many other people, but that you would be 29th of 32 teams when you handed out a franchise quarterback contract really says something.
I was surprised to see them that low. I don't know. They've had like, you know, an amazing offseason, but I don't think they also had like a disastrous, although, you know, it all comes down to, I guess, whether you believe in Daniel Jones or not.
Right.
But I think that's still a little bit harsh.
Then let's start with the Eagles. I don't know that we have a number, but like reasons we are bullish on them. Should I go first? I think that makes sense for me to go first.
Yeah, I don't know it's about a specific number, but yes, go ahead.
Well, they're the reigning NFC champions. they had a billion sacks last year. If there is regression to the mean, they were so far, like yeah. They were on one end of the spectrum that regression to the mean would literally be the mean. You know what I'm saying? And so if you're at the mean, you're still, you know, that's pretty like solid stuff. And if you're at the mean and, you know, plus minus things go your way on average, I mean, it works out for you. I mean, I have some reasons to be bearish too, again, just, you know, for next week, yeah, which we'll I think will be interesting. But Jalen Hurts exists, obviously. You know, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, the draft, all the Georgia stuff, the Alabama stuff, whatever. Like, it is still one of the most talented rosters in the NFL that while a teeny tiny purge did happen, did not get completely and totally picked apart the way a lot of teams who play in the Super Bowl do. So, I mean, you're returning the nucleus of a very, very, very good team. That is really the main and primary reason for me, but it's a very solid one in my mind.
I wrote down five different things. They're not all in depth, but just like kind of five things that came to mind. So I'll hit those real quick. I think, you know, best quarterback in the NFC. And if at the very worst, like second best quarterback in the NFC, and
that applies to our first two teams here, obviously, which is a good thing. Like, and it makes the rivalry fun.
Yeah, and the drop off between the top two to the like third or anything else is significant. So at the very least, one of the top two quarterbacks in the NFC, and then, you know, one of the top whatever in the NFL as a whole. That's number one. Number two, still very strong in the trenches. They lost Javon Hargrave, but I mean, you added Jalen Carter, you added Nolan Smith, and you still have Hassan Reddick, and you still have Brandon Graham. Like, and Fletcher Cox returned. I'm not like crazy about that, but there's worse options to have. Jason Kelsey didn't retire. They lost Isaac Simalo, but Cam Jurgens is coming off the bench. They drafted Tyler Steen. They have options there. It's not like they're hopeless there. And even if that spot isn't like amazing, you'll still like sign up for the rest of the offensive line. Very much so. So they're still strong in the trenches. That's number two. Number three, might actually have a defensive coordinator who like can have a prayer against a good quarterback, yet remains to be seen. But Jonathan Gannon, who is certainly not like aged well thus far in Arizona, is gone. So I like that. Number four, I think the ceiling for running back is better. Miles Sanders had a good year last year, but I think many would be able to argue that Penny and Swift, the ceiling of those players, while they might both not hit, and it's possible none of them hit, the ceiling, I think, has been raised at running back. And lastly, I know this is a lot to react to, they actually have the easiest schedule in the NFC East, according to projected win totals.
Because they're not playing themselves. Like, that's the difference between them 13th, and any other team in the NFC East.
Whereas the Cowboys are 18th, the Giants are 19th, and Washington is all the way down. Even though they had a quote-unquote last-place schedule, Washington actually has the hardest schedule at 24th. Certainly, the Eagles being good is factoring in there. But still, I think...
The other teams being good for Washington as well. Like, they have to... Like, the sure. Six games are against three teams in the divisional round.
Yes, but I do want to point out, like, because there's just so much that was said about, oh, the Eagles have the toughest schedule in the NFL by strength of schedule. I've said it consistently. Like, strength of schedule is dumb. Like, give me projected win total over that.
I don't think it's dumb. I mean, I think it's, but it shouldn't be like your driving thing. You know what I'm saying?
It's less meaningful than projected win total. Absolutely, it is.
I think that they both have value, but if you're marrying the two to come up with some sort of like hybrid, that's the overall goal. Cause you can't just dismiss like who every team was last year. Like it has some value, but
I'm not saying it's an easy schedule. I just don't think it's like this impossible schedule that you would maybe some are making it out to be because of the hardest strength of schedule thing.
No, but I mean, again, I like the statement like, oh, well, the Commanders have the hardest schedule. Again, it's like really obvious why, like, because every team in their division was in the playoffs and, you know, won double. Well, how many games did the Giants win? 10, right? Last year. So, yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense.
It was the tie.
Oh, you're because they had the tie. 9-7 against the Commanders.
And 1.
I think all that is well said. I mean, the quarterback thing is huge. The you didn't mention it, but like on my list was they didn't get destroyed at corner. Like, I feel like that's been, and you correct me if I'm wrong, like as it relates to the Cowboys, like for the last, I don't know, like call it like 7-8 years. It's been this matter of like, how is Amari Cooper, if you're an Eagles fan, like how is Amari Cooper beating us? How is CeeDee Lamb beating us? Like we just do not have the corners to like cover these dudes. And so like, if there had been this exodus at that position, I do think there could have been some like regression to those times. And I do think that while there might be some regression for Bradberry and or Darius Slay, like you still have two, at the worst, very solid cornerbacks to work with and kind of patrol your defense. The Chauncey Gardner-Johnson departure, whatever, it's a safety, you kind of figure that out. I think one of the biggest things, like one of the biggest wins for the Eagles in the offseason is the rugby play was not outlawed. Like that's like a big deal. And something that really kind of helps the Eagles. Like I'm not saying it takes them from like, it adds a win to their,
I still
overall.
Think they would have been really good at sneaks, even if they can't push, because their offensive line is very good. And
but
so
they can
quarterback.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so even it, like it would have hindered them, call it 1% or a fraction of a percent, but 0% is less than that. That's my point. So, and they have an aggressive mindset in a lot of ways, like in a coaching way, in a roster management way. So yeah, I mean,
best
like
coach in the division. Is that fair to say?
No.
Why? Like, I don't the best think coach in the division.
I mean, I would say
you
it's Mike
say
McCarthy.
One.
I would say it's Mike McCarthy.
Okay.
Nick Sirianni has been a head coach for 3 seasons, right? And he's been to a Super Bowl, right? Like, I'm not saying he's bad, but like, we discount who Mike McCarthy is for a lot of reasons. Like, you know, it's ridiculous to me, like, that you would say that Nick Sirianni is better than him.
I mean, he surpassed their projected win total in both of his first seasons.
Okay.
He's overachieved.
They have also played, had the benefit, like the Cowboys have, of playing the Commanders and the Giants that were rebuilding. That's a fair thing to say. Okay. And the whole division, he's lost more to McCarthy than he's won. Nick Sirianni has. So, I mean, that doesn't matter either. So, head-to-head matchups favor McCarthy between the two of them. But anyway, I think that I agree with
Wait,
you.
What, like 2-1?
Well, the 2020 was the first. No, not 2020, but 2021 was a sweep.
We're not
for
counting the last game in Week 18. That's not a real game. They were.
Okay.
They were.
Well, then it's still 2-1.
Yeah, like, I mean, but so, it's okay. One game.
Okay. Well, it's more. Like, he's won more head to head, and okay. It's like, and he's never lost to Nick Sirianni at home, Mike McCarthy.
So you're putting Sirianni second behind McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm using McCarthy's like Green Bay era and tenure to evaluate who he is as a coach, the same way other people do with other coaches, like the same way Broncos fans do with Sean Payton. Like if Sean Payton was the coach of the Cowboys, I think, like, this is a separate take, but like, I think Sean Payton won by not getting the Cowboys job, because Sean Payton still gets the like hype without the like teardown that comes from working for the Cowboys. You know what I'm saying?
And he doesn't have to not advance in the second round.
Anyway, but yeah, I would go McCarthy, Sirianni, Dable. Well, no, Rivera. Rivera's just been so bad. Like, it's hard to defend anything. I felt that way for a long time, though, so I'm a little bit biased against Rivera, but I will fully admit that. But this is about the Eagles. I agree that the ceiling with DeAndre's, the floor rather, is higher in the running back room. Third year, Devontae Smith.
It's higher. I'd say the floor is lower.
I think the floor is higher. I think the ceiling is maybe the same, you know what I mean? But I think the floor is higher. I think Devontae Smith, you got third year wide receiver. That's a common rule of thumb, like breakout year coming. Like, maybe this is the year where Devontae becomes like the dude and AJ's just like an awesome second dude, you know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reasons to believe. Hassan Reddick in another year. I mean, yeah, the infusion of draft talent. Like, I think Javon Hargrave being gone isn't like a good thing. Like, obviously, like, you'd rather have him than not have him, but like, if it opens the door for possibilities and development of other players, like, that is a good thing. So even the bad things weren't like terrible for this team, is I guess the point.
Yeah, I don't think they lost anyone where they don't have some kind of plan behind them. It's not just like, mm-hmm. well, what do we do here? And there are teams like that and situations like that that they're able to get, again, like Jalen Carter, or have N'Kobe Dean in-house so he's ready to take over for one of the linebacker spots. You know, those guys are projections. I don't know that they're going to be amazing, but at least you have, like, something that you can feel optimistic about, as opposed to, like, again, there are teams with very tenuous situations where you're trying to, like, string things together with duct tape and glue.
Do we have any other bear or bullish reasons? This is still a difficult subject for me. Or do we want to move on?
We can move on.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. The Dallas Cowboys. I would like you to go first. I went first for the Eagles. So actually,
yeah, I think it's the easiest one is Dak interception regression. He was at a 1.7 interception percentage in the first six seasons of his career, and he was at 3.8 last year. So it's a very more than double of what he was in the past. And obviously, he'll be healthier in terms of not his hand not being injured. So I definitely think, I mean, that number is just going to come down. So that alone is a really big factor
when it comes down, because, like, that's just the way, like, math works, right? Like, we're talking, like, you know, regression to the mean. Like, regression to the mean happens in positive ways, but when that number comes down, there will be takes like, you know, this, like, late October, mid November, like, what is Dak doing differently? And it's like, sometimes there are just outliers. Like, it's, yeah, like, it's just life, it's just gravity. I agree with you. I think, you know, the low-hanging fruit, I thought, was the Gilmore and Brandon Cooks acquisitions.
I have, like, number two on my list.
I mean, if you compare the aggression of roster building relative to last year we killed the Cowboys, maybe you and I, but, like, we the collective, for three specific things. Do you remember what they were over the offseason?
What, offensive tackle, Tyron, just counting on Tyron, no real backup plan other than, like, Josh Ball, maybe.
You've gotten, I'll give you credit for that one. That's one.
And then Amari, obviously. Right. And two. Then backup quarterback?
No, the third was the way the Randy Gregory thing happened, because there was the, okay, like, clause and the contract. Sure. So the trading away of Amari, it wasn't just the Tyron thing. Like, the reason I gave you credit, though, was because it was about the tackle position, but mm-hmm. they cut Lyle Collins, and they seemingly had no real plan. Yep. Now, that it worked out and Tyler Smith was amazing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, that looked really suspect on paper, and it blew up in their face at the final week of training camp, or final week of the preseason before the regular season started, or it was 2 weeks before, whatever, when Tyron got hurt and they were really up a creek. And then, yeah, the Randy Gregory thing, and, you know, they drafted, like, their first three picks in the draft were Tyler Smith, Sam Williams, Jalen Tolbert, which directly replaced their tackle need, their pass rusher need, and their wide receiver need, but they didn't draft for need. And it worked out, but again, those things were really dumb. So this is the exact opposite of that, right? Like, okay, we need help at corner. Let's trade for Stephon Gilmore. Let's add that veteran. You know, we're not super comfortable with where we are at wide receiver, which we learned not only throughout the season, but with the T.Y. Hilton and Odell stuff, obviously, late in the year. So we're going to trade for Brandon Cooks. Like, they have addressed pre-holes, you know what I'm saying, which is a great breath of fresh air. It's something they haven't done in a very long time. One of our writers, Danny Phantom, he verified this as best as he could, so I don't know if this is 100% true. But I believe this is the first time ever that the Cowboys are starting a season with three receivers who have eclipsed 1,000 yards in their career. So you got CD, Brandon Cooks, and Michael Gallup. Not that you get a trophy for that, but my point is, like, they've bought established things instead of, like, buying things that are unknown and hoping for the best. They have hedged their bet, which has been nice to see. So that's my point on Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, I put the address big positions of weakness, and then I kind of lumped in Mazi Smith in there too, because that was obviously which I do think, which is kind of my criticism or concern or worry about the pick, is that I wonder how much it was just an immediate short-term kind of thing with the idea you're just going to fix the run defense with him. And, you know, I think that's a lot of pressure on one player and a rookie alone at that. Not to say he can't help, but just, like, you know, I don't know that it's a solution, just that one guy. So, but still, there was a vision in mind. And I think between Cooks, Gilmore, and Mazi Smith, those guys have the potential to be difference makers for the Cowboys.
I would also add reasons to be, or like to the reasons to be bullish list. I have two. Dan Quinn did not leave, right? Like sure. We were like, oh man, like definitely happening. It didn't happen last year. It's absolutely going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. So Dan Quinn did not leave. And along those same lines, now Barnwell was not a fan of this in the write-up that we mentioned, but a lot of Cowboys fans are. They moved on from Kellen Moore. So that you know, does have a division among Cowboys fans. Like some people, I mean, you know how that is. Like, I don't know that there's like an Eagles fan standing for Jonathan Gannon, but I'm sure before, I'm sure before the Super Bowl, at least, there were some people who maybe a small sector who were like, he's better than we think. And then obviously he lost everyone then. But you know how that can be, right? Like some people are like, he stinks. Some people are like, no, he's really great. Like whatever. So depending on who you ask, that's another reason.
Yeah, well, I'll get to Brian Schottenheimer and Mike McCarthy in the bearish episode. For now,
we're doing a lot of teasing.
Well, that's next week's episode. For this week's episode, I have Eagles take a step back. You know, this is the Cowboys section, so I think I can be bearish on the Eagles a little bit in this section. Oh,
interesting baking in. Okay.
Well, with the context that it's like said every episode, no repeat winner since 2004. Right. So that's obviously, it's not even just about the Eagles. It's about the division.
That lends to the Cowboys' advantage, you're saying.
Yeah, right. It's absolutely relevant because there's just, it's not something you can, I know it's like a trivia thing and not necessarily predictive, but it's just true though. It's like, how could you possibly go into the season being like, yes, the Eagles are definitely going to win the division? No, you can't say that. You can't just say they're definitely going to do it. Again, it's really hard to do.
I think so. This is Super Bowl 58, right? This year.
Yep.
So like we're going on 19 years, right? If the Eagles don't win the division in this year in 2023, it will be 19 years in a row that a singular team has not repeated as an NFC East champion, right? Because the last time was 2004. So it was 19 years ago. And so I guess it's been 19 years, but whatever. I don't want to get into the like Eagles two years. Yeah, I don't want to do that. But my point is like, it's not just like a 5-year sample size. Like we're talking literally a third. Like I'm rounding here, but like a third of NFL Super Bowl era history here. Like that is basically the 21st century. Like I realize I'm cutting a little bit off, but like it is an extraordinary amount of time. It's not just like a drop in the bucket.
It's also like indicative of volatility in the NFL. That's how the NFL is. They're just like, you have good years, you have bad years. Sometimes they're really hard to predict. It's not as simple as you just win the division year in and year out, unless you're like the Chiefs. But again, that's not the norm. That is more so the exception.
I agree. Like there's the unicorn that comes along every once in a while. The Patriots are like the unicorn of unicorns. The Chiefs are like a baby unicorn at this point. But I agree. Other reason I would add to be bullish, Michael Gallup. Had the torn ACL season last year. There's many people who say, again, it depends on like what you want to believe. A lot of, you know, medical experts and injury experts say like it takes you a full year, you know what I mean, to recover. And he was very clearly not himself. I don't think that's like, you know, up for debate last year. So there would be hope that there would be regression in that sense, that regression to who he used to be prior to the injury, which occurred, I don't know if you recall, in January of 2022. So you've got that working out in your favor. I don't like, you know, being mean like this. You have less of a problem with it than I do, but Zeke is gone, right? Like Zeke hindered the offense to a large degree. That's not to say he didn't have his value, didn't have his place, didn't have his worth, but he did hinder the offense in a lot of ways. And so kind of like if you're somebody who believes Kellen Moore's departure is a good thing for the offense, Zeke's departure is a good thing in a number of different ways as well.
Side point here, tangent, on the mention of the Chiefs and winning the division, and maybe this is something you can bring up to our good friend Pete Sweeney in the future. I don't think it gets talked about enough how much of an advantage it is that they had two relocations between the Chargers and the Raiders. Like that's a big deal because like you're moving away from like these passionate, or at least more so relative to the new place, passionate fan bases. So you're like, you're weakening the crowds at two different road stadiums. Like that's a really big advantage, especially when the Chargers have like no fan base at all. Like that's kind of a really nice thing to have, I have to say.
I reached a point where I like had a little bit of a bitterness towards the Chiefs, like I think everybody did, and you have one now for
this obvious has nothing reasons. To do with the Super Bowl.
No. But like I'm saying, like
Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
I'm like, you, good for you them. Remember you and I and Stats talking about this. Like we all had a little bit of like Chiefs attrition, and again prior to the Super Bowl, and then I do think that they kind of broke through all that. But like So I would have argued this a lot back then, but like I do, there is some merit to that. I really think it really also puts in perspective.
Big advantage.
Right. Well, it also puts in perspective how pathetic the Broncos have been, that like they haven't been able to like remotely capitalize on that.
Right.
But I actually brought this up to Pete. He didn't know Andy Reid has won. I don't know if you heard this. He's won as many, like they've won as many division titles in the Andy Reid era as they had all time before he arrived. That's insane. But to your point, that's also capitalizing on the weakness around you.
Yeah, I'm not trying to take credit away from the Chiefs. I'm just saying that's a nice like little thing to have in your back pocket as a bonus. Like that certainly helps. And that goes towards like the recipe for success there.
Right.
So there you go.
Michael Gallup coming back. Micah Parsons in year three. The team having a, again, you can go bullish and bearish on certain subjects, I think, which we'll find out next week, obviously. But and the, you know, whatever Dan Quinn or Mike are going to say publicly or not, the like seemingly full-time commitment to Micah Parsons as a pass rusher is a good thing. I would also add they did not lose Leighton Vander Esch and Donovan Wilson, kind of like we talked about Darius Slay and James Bradbury for the Eagles. Like those were departures we were really worried about on the Cowboys side of things. And the fact like that's why, like when that happened in free agency, we were almost all kind of like, we're good. And then they traded for Stephon Gilmore and it was like, holy crap. And then they traded for Brandon Cooks and it was like, this is Nirvana. So retaining both Vander Esch and Donovan Wilson was a big thing.
That's all I had.
Well then let's take a break and hear a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. While we were gone, Brandon, you gave me some positive words that I have needed. Do you remember why?
Positive words that you needed. I think I said that phrase that I mentioned earlier. You know what they always say?
Well, I'm actually really nervous because I don't know if I told you this. The weekend of the draft, the Friday night after Friday night of the draft, we had this massive rainstorm here. And I don't need to get into the specifics, but the storm damaged part of my pit boss, my smoker, my pellet grill. And so I had to get a part replaced. And it has been a big thing. They've been really great, the customer service team, but like it got lost and they had to send a second one. So it's supposed to arrive actually like right after I get done recording with you. And there's some installation involved. And they did send me the instructions. And I'm so, because it's been since the draft, like I'm so like anxious for food off of it. You know what I'm saying? But I'm really nervous that I'm not going to be able to install it properly. And I told you that during the break and you said, you got it, man. I believe in you. I love
that
you.
Sounds Those like are your me. Exact words. That sounds exactly like how I talk. So I think the listeners believe it too.
The New York good once again at football Giants. One of us has got to go first on the Giants. One of us has got to go first on the Commanders. Because I'm a good friend, I'll let you pick which one you want.
Well, I went first last time, so why don't you go first this time?
Again, there's some, you know, glass half full, glass half empty perspective here, but they kept Daniel Jones. And I do think that that is a reason to be bullish, because had he left, what would they have done? I'm actually seriously asking you that. Like what would they have? Jimmy Garoppolo would have been the plan with his like weird contract. You know what I mean? That was the talk of the weekend. You know what I mean? Like what would have been the, like what
could have made a play for Lamar, but not like a guarantee.
Because that wouldn't have happened in all likelihood. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like would they have like traded for Russell Wilson? You know what I mean? Like would it have been Derek Carr? You know what I mean? Like none of those things, like plus the cost involved, would have been worth it in my mind. So they were able to keep Daniel Jones. They were able, or they did not pay Saquon. That's a big positive for me as far as like being bullish on them overall. They added weapons. They traded for Darren Waller. They drafted Jalen Hyatt. They signed Paris Campbell. Like they have a fully competent, like when they huddle up, it's a you know, group of competent NFL players. I cannot say that has been the case for a long time. And they will have stronger development from some of their significant contributors. You've mentioned Evan Neal a bunch of times. Kayvon Thibodeau, who we've talked about in different ways, like from just a football perspective, will be an absolutely better player next season. I was a big fan of the Bobby Okereke signing. I know that you were not. But still, I mean, like, and they have not made any panic moves. Like, Adoree Jackson kind of wants out. They're like, okay, dude, well, you can play one final season with us, and then we'll move on. Like, they're becoming a shrewd football operation, which is a good thing to see.
I put three different things. Number one is Daniel Jones has his best supporting situation ever, right? It has to be.
All right? You sick? Yeah. Like I was?
Sorry. No, a froggy throat, if you will. They added Darren Waller. I like Jalen Hyatt a lot as a dynamic weapon. Excuse me.
People thought he'd be, just to buy you some time to clear your throat, people thought Jalen Hyatt would be the like number one receiver draft. Like if you had asked somebody in the middle of November, you know what I mean? Like they would have been like, I remember like people would talk like, oh, maybe Jalen Hyatt will make it to the Cowboys. They're like, there's no way. You know what right. I mean? And I know a lot of things happen, but still like that player is still there.
Yeah. And again, I don't know about Jalen Hyatt volume wide receiver, but I do absolutely believe in Jalen Hyatt, like Deshaun Jackson mm-hmm. element, where he's just like this problematic deep threat that everyone has to deal with. And whether that's him actually making big plays or opening things up underneath for the Giants, which they had a lot of success underneath with Daniel Jones and kind of limiting the turnovers like we talked about. Yeah, I definitely think this is the best supporting cast. You'd already touched on it with Evan Neal, who we talked about last week in our
I don't remember. I blacked out
because I was step sick. Back. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So there's that. And I also think that Dable has a case for second best head coach in the division. Obviously we disagree on that, but he's
better than Nick Sirianni is the case.
You can disagree right. about that, but you can't disagree. Like he had a good season last year. He seems like he's a good coach. Seems like he knows what he's doing. And the coaching staff continuity. They didn't really lose anyone when there was, you know, talk that they could lose Wink Martindale. He interviewed for at least one job. Mike Kafka interviewed for multiple jobs. And I point to the Eagles from last year with this. The Eagles didn't lose like any other coaching. They didn't even touch their coaching staff, basically, going from 21 to 2022. And that doesn't mean the Giants are going to have the same level of success. But I do think there can be value in continuity. So they have that going for them. And the last thing I wrote down is what you already touched on as well with Thibodeau. I think he could be like, you know, one of these second year players who could make a big jump.
To your coaching point, if we look at the three playoff teams, which again excludes the Commanders, obviously, they're the only one who didn't see any coaching change. Now, granted, the Cowboys change was purposeful, right, in moving on from Kellen Moore, and the Eagles was opportunity based on the head coaching opportunities for Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. But, you know, they didn't lose. I mean, and that's sometimes mm-hmm. the weird. It's almost like, I mean, it's like when teams tank, right? It's like if you can't win the Super Bowl, you want to, you know, you want the better opportunities, you wanted the higher draft pick, whatever. So like if you can't win the Super Bowl, you want your coordinators to return in this weird hypothetical. But that worked out for them. I think the Dable thing is also like a reason to be bullish on them, like year two. Like if that was year one, like what happens when he has a full year, like, and he doesn't, you know, they don't have all this going on. And I think that applies to the team as a whole, the culture, et cetera, et cetera. But also specifically to Daniel Jones. I'm not, you know, saying, oh man, what are his MVP odds of, you know, over at DraftKings? But like he is a, like with the Brian Dable bump, like he is a stable quarterback. He's like, you know, when you play a video game and you get like armor or something like that, and it like takes your defense up from like level 5 to like level million. Like that's what Brian Dable is for Daniel Jones. Like without him, his defense is like level, like, which is ironic, is level 5, but like with it, it's level 1 million. So I think that's a good thing. And again, I mean, they have not, what is the stupid thing they've done? I know some people would say paying Daniel Jones, but like they didn't bring Odell in. They didn't, you know, pay Saquon. Like they have graduated from those sorts of things. I mean, think about it. Like they have become like, so Joe Shane deserves a lot of credit too here. And I know you know and agree with that, but it's not just Brian Dable.
I think there could be something to the Giants believing in themselves actually too. You know, they're not coming into the season like, oh, we're the Giants. We're literally last season, as we talked about many times too, them and the Jets entered the league as the two worst teams in the league since 2017. So you kind of have that stench, and there has to be some kind of human psychology stuff going on there where like we lose a lot. That's what we do. And it stinks, but like, this is kind of who we are. But now they actually had a season like, okay, we made some progress. We actually believe we can win some of these games. And that doesn't like supersede everything. You have to be talented. You can't just have belief, but I think belief is part of the equation. And I think they might have more of that now than they ever had. So I think, again, if you're looking for optimistic cases, is that they come into the season feeling like, hey, we can make some noise. It's not about like, hey, is this going to work? Are we still losers? It's like, no, we're like a decent team.
I agree with your human psychology point. Also from the perspective of like, you know, obviously you're coming off of not just a playoff season, but a playoff win. You know, I mean, like all those mm-hmm. things help and boost your, you know, kind of vibe. But beyond that, like, remember when they were 7-3, we were like, it's it. That's it. It's over. Like, they're, you know, they're about to fall apart. Like that exactly. did not happen. You know what I mean? Like you have. It's not
in
just
a situation
like,
where it could have, because they got screwed with the Commanders had like that bye coming off. Mm-hmm. The Commanders played them in twice. They had that all that extra time to prepare, and at FedEx Field too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, it's not just a matter of like, we believe we're not that anymore. It's like, no, we literally proved that we're not that anymore. And so it's like, I think of like, I don't know, like things all the time. It's like when you have like your first year at a job, like everything is like your first time, whatever. So like, it's actually like your second time where you're like, oh, well, it's no longer my first. Like, it's no longer like my first this, my first that, whatever. So like, they're past all the firsts. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a good and a liberating thing for them. And that they're past all the firsts with all these accomplishments under them already, I think is really great. And I think a big point, you know, for them in their favor is a bit of a bullish point, you know, on the Cowboys. But your point about the Eagles, right? Like, there's regression maybe coming for the Eagles, the 20-year thing, whatever. And for the Cowboys, it's like, well, they can't have a billion takeaways another year in a row, right? Like, if regression comes for the top two teams in the division, like, the door is well swung open for the Giants to win it. Like, I predicted a year ago when we did our four-way show, and everybody laughed at me. None of y'all believed the way I did, and y'all are stupid.
You said you regretted that after the fact.
I never said that.
And you totally did get swept up at the moment when we were on the podcast, and you also admitted that to that. But I do think, to what you're talking about, for real, it's confidence. Like, confidence is a real thing. They have earned the right to have some confidence, and it might serve them not at all. Like, again, it's not, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place, but it could be meaningful. I do think it could be of value.
And I think the Jets are, like, I know we're not talking about the AFC East, but like, I think they're a good team, and I think they'll be better obviously this year. But like, the two New York teams, or the New York title teams, they have two different types of confidence to me. Like you said it, like, the Giants' confidence is completely earned. You know what I'm saying? The Jets' confidence is completely and totally just like hope. Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like you don't have the career accomplishments of Aaron Rodgers. Like, just because he wears your uniform now and is like on your team, like they, you're not the same as the Giants, the Jets aren't. Like, you have to prove that first, and then, you know, Brandon and RJ will respect you at least. So,
all right, let's move on to the Commanders. If you're done, the Giants.
Set the table. You can do this. I believe in you.
I mean, obviously, we already, like, Snyder being gone, we already covered that. So I'm not going to say that. It's very obvious. I can say that really quickly. Unlike every other NFC East team, I wrote here, I have four things for the Commanders. Number one is, unlike every other NFC East team, not facing the pressure of expectation, because there's a lot of pressure on the other teams. The Eagles coming off the Super Bowl, Cowboys like having to get over the hump and being right there and kind of maybe being perceived as the favorites because of the lack of repeat winner. And then the Giants having gone from being bad to being good. If there's any kind of struggle, it's going to be like, oh no, same old Giants. So with the Commanders, they're kind of just, I mean, that's kind of the luxury of people thinking you're bad, is that there aren't a lot of expectations. So you kind of aren't facing that. Obviously, Rivera is facing pressure in terms of being a lame duck coach or whatever, or kind of on closer to his way out. But as a whole, like, if the Commanders are bad, it's not going to be people are shocked. So I think there is something to that in terms of playing loose and feeling like, hey, no one gave us a shot. We can sneak up on people. Whereas other teams in this division, I think, have more of a target on them. And it's like, oh, we have to bring our A game because we're playing these teams that made the playoffs last year, where it's like, oh, the Commanders, like, we can take them for granted. That'll be an easy game. So I do think they have that in their favor.
I think that's really fair to say. They're kind of like the youngest sibling in a family where everybody has struggled, right? And so it's kind of like, well, you know, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? The bar is low. Like, nobody can really do anything, you know, whatever. Like, just kind of hang on, I think is maybe the best way to put it.
They're going to be underestimated.
Right. And I mean, the same point you made about the Cowboys, about the Giants, I mean, that we brought up, or the same point you made when we talked about the Cowboys, and then I brought up when we talked about the Giants, is true here, right? The attrition to the entire division. Like, you're not going to be in a division that has three playoff teams again, in all likelihood, right? Like, especially this one, right? That, you know, we talked about the 2004 thing. My biggest one, like, outside of the Snyder thing, is this was a very good football team, like, in, like, relative to context. Like, do you remember what their highest, like, let's say highest, but like, the highest point was, like, when we were talking about them, like, the whole division potentially making it, what their record was?
No,
they were 7-5. They were 7-5, and then the tie with the Giants happened. So they fell to 7-5-1, and then the bye week, and then they lost to the Giants, and then they lost to the Niners because the Niners didn't fall apart with Brock Purdy like we thought they might. But like, you were 7-5, like, and you were 7-5 with like chaos, you know what I mean? Like, and 7-5 when Carson Wentz started part of your season. So like, similar to like other things, Carson Wentz is gone. Like, you have finally ridded yourself from the bad, you know, vibe or decision or whatever you want to call it. Like, I don't know that I believe in Jacoby Brissett or Sam Howell, but like, you know,
the vibe shift from Wentz to Brissett is huge. That's a great point for the locker room. That is massive.
Yeah. I mean, specifically like no disrespect to Sam Howell, but like Jacoby Brissett's one of the like most loved dudes in the entire NFL. And great so teammate. I agree. The Carson thing kind of felt like the last, and maybe it was like appropriate, like Snyder football thing. You know what I mean? Sure. Like the last
Albert Haynesworth big decision.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so like you're free of those, you know what I'm saying? Like what is the contract that they have right now that we're like, that's so stupid. You know what I mean? Like find it. Like I would challenge you. You know what I mean? They really don't have one. I mean, it's, you know, and who was it? Jerome Payne, who they tagged, right? Not Jonathan Allen.
Yeah.
So they tagged and they got the deal done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so you got the deal done despite all of that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have these weird kind of things hanging out. Terry McLaurin is under contract. Like, you have, you know, the Chase Young thing didn't work out, but you know what? They acknowledged that, right? Like, they didn't hold on. They didn't pick up the fifth year option. They're no longer living in fantasy land as a football team. Like, you know, that's one part of who this organization is, obviously. So, like, all these things point positively for me. Like, and I don't believe in the head coach, but if you want to, you know, take this as a positive thing, like it's maybe his last year, right? Like, so like you're maybe almost done with that part of the ride.
And I bet you Commander Sands listening to this are like, I can't believe you already haven't mentioned this, which is probably the number one biggest reason for optimism, is Eric Bieniemy. Maybe right. He is really as good as advertised. I kind of have questions because of how no one has like ultimately kind of wanted him, and that at the time of the Commanders hiring him, I said, like, I think this isn't like necessarily the best signal. Like, he's ending up here of all places. I don't like that. No, that's the best development for Eric Bieniemy's actual stock and outlook. But there's a chance that everyone is right and he does deserve a head coaching job and maybe gets it in Washington. We'll see, depending on how things go. But maybe he is the real deal. I think it's fair to say that the offense wasn't really going places with Scott Turner. So, you know, this has the potential to be a big upgrade. I don't know that Sam Howell could be anything, but I'll put a non-zero chance that he could be something. I mean, he was like a legitimate prospect. Obviously, he like didn't finish strong at North Carolina, but at one time he was like it's not just like this guy out of nowhere.
At one point, people thought he'd be a first-round pick in 2022, right. And so that obviously didn't happen.
Like there might be something to work with there. I think that's fair to say. I wouldn't, again, bank on that. But like, it's not like you're drafting, you know, like the Eagles drafted Clayton Thorson or, you know, like, or Will Greer. You know, like these like kind of just, yeah, it's whatever. That guy's clearly not going to be anything. So I thought Sam Howell was a great value when they drafted him. I thought they got him lower than I thought he would have gone. So I definitely think that's a fair point. And the last thing I'll say here, defense is talented. If Emmanuel Forbes works out, which I think is a big if, considering he's 166 pounds, it's a good secondary. And I think it's hard to say, like, if Chase Young works out because of, the signal does not seem good on him coming off an injury and everything. But I guess there's a path where he is healthy and he looks great. So the larger point being, they still have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And for as much as I think Jack Del Rio there's some big question marks there. He's certainly at the very least been able to produce good defenses.
I actually have a question because I don't know that I can think of an example. Can you name a time where a first round player did not have their fifth year option picked up and then played through their rookie contract, obviously, and then signed with a different team and the original team received a compensatory pick? Can you think of an example of that?
I think that's going to happen with Andre Dillard.
You get what I'm saying? You get the like prompt I'm describing. Yeah, about, right?
Not
like,
likely, but I think that is going
to
happen with
so,
Dillard.
Well, the fact that it's Andre question. Dillard makes what I'm about to say sound jaded, but it's not. I don't think that should be allowed. Like, if you decline the fifth year option, you're saying we don't, you know, we're good. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't believe in a player. So, like, you know, if you re-sign the player, though, to, like, because some players, like, this happened with Leighton Vander Esch. Like, they declined his fifth-year option, and they brought him back on a one-year deal. If he had left, I think you should be eligible to get the compensatory pick then. But you shouldn't if you decline the fifth-year option, because by your own admission, you're saying that this player kind of sticks.
They did. The NFL did get rid of, like, a couple years ago, the option thing. I think it used to be, if I'm not mistaken, you could decline not just the fifth year option, not like just other options, other right. like contract. And but then I changed that, I believe. But I think it's still in place with the.
I think the spirit of what I'm saying makes sense, though, because why should the Commanders in this case be allowed to reap a potential benefit of Chase Young playing well and leaving and getting paid when they're saying right now we don't believe in him?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Look at me. Hit me up, competition committee. I'll make your lives easier. I would offer my last one. You have Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson. You have one of the best receiver pairs in the NFL. Like, that is something that should be said. You have Brian Robinson. I wouldn't say stumbled, but like, you discovered one of the better young running backs in the NFL, and his story is obviously incredible with his recovery. I mean, so there is stuff to work with here. You know what I mean? Like, you got to find your artist. I don't know who that is. Maybe it is Eric Bieniemy.
They need the catalyst, I believe, which is, you know, the quarterback should be at least. I think on your Dotson McLaurin point, I don't know. And we'll get into this with our, you know, NFC East offense team, specifically with the wide receivers. I don't think they're the best pair in the division, but I think going into any game against the divisional teams and other teams with really good wide receivers, I think it's very possible that like Dotson and McLaurin could end that game as the top two receivers in that game. Like, they were the top two guys on that given day.
I agree. But I think part of the reason why they're not the best in the division is because the division has two other really talented pairs. You know what I'm saying?
It's tough. It's a very right. tough, like, there's so, really like, good receivers in this division.
Would Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson be the best receiver duo in the NFC North?
I don't really know the North.
Maybe not. Well, Justin Jefferson exists, so obviously not. But yeah. The NFC South, maybe?
Who are you looking at there? The Falcons.
Tampa. Like, Tampa still exists, and Tampa still, you know, whatever.
Who's Tampa F?
Well, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. That's what I'm saying. Like, it depends how you feel about them now. But, you know, they'd be closer, at least. Would they be the best? Not the AFC East because of Miami.
And are we going quarterback agnostic here too? Are we factoring in like their production relative?
No, like you're saying, if you can swap them out, like that's the game. Definitely not the AFC North. Maybe the AFC South. Definitely the AFC South. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know people are bullish on Jacksonville, but like, I think we all want to see Calvin Ridley a little bit, you know what I mean, before we like really crown them.
Yeah. I mean, he has to reprove himself after being out for a year.
And even the AFC West, like, if you could make an argument that on any team, they'd be the best receiver duo in the AFC West. Like, Kansas City doesn't have like a super intimidating duo because Patrick Mahomes exists. It depends how you feel about the Chargers, but like Keenan Allen, I don't know that anybody really is like super high on anymore. Mike Williams, Quentin Johnson, like whatever. And the Raiders, like, you know, Devontae Adams and Hunter Renfrow, maybe you think they're better like as a duo. And again, Denver has a lot to prove in a lot of ways. I think they might be the best in the AFC West.
I know I already mentioned the Snyder thing, but I guess another part of that I should have mentioned is kind of like I talked about the Giants. Commanders can now believe now we can be good again. Not necessarily be amazing this year, but like Snyder's gone. So it's like a fresh slate, and maybe, I don't know if this is real, but players could be like more motivated. There's more on the line in the sense like you're trying to impress the new ownership. You want to be part of this new core of a team. You feel like there is hope. The crowd could be better than it's been in a long time. Stadium is still not good, but the crowd could feel like fans could be. I'm sure there's a number of fans who swore off the team with Dan Snyder and like, I'm not going to that stadium until he's not the owner anymore. And I think you'll get, I bet you there's a crowd increase this year. I don't know, it's to the point that it's, you know, like the most fearsome play in the NFL, but I bet you it's a better crowd than it's been in a bit. So that's another thing too.
I would also offer last thing, like, you're like, I'm back to my first year point. Like, it's no longer the first, everything is the Commanders. And I know that there's some like question about that, but like for now, at least, you know what I mean?
Well,
like
for now, because it might change again. Saying.
For now,
they should change it again. Get rid of the. Come on.
I think. Well, if you're like, I said this, you know, recently here, but like, I think Josh Harris, if he's paying what $6 billion, should be allowed to name the team. That he
wants. Why does he? Unless he just loves that name. Yeah. Why would he keep?
Yeah. If in this particularly unique situation, he should be allowed to name it what he wants. So
sure.
But
he might have to.
What if he named it the Sixers? Would you be bothered?
I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Why? It's the nation's capital, like 1776.
That's not how that works.
I mean, I know it didn't happen there, but like it's an equally, you know, significant thing, like relative to the country. Like, what is the best name? If we have to pick a name that we want, what do we want it to be?
For the Washington team?
Yeah.
I think they should have went with Red Wolves.
Red Wolves would be cool. I would feel less dumb saying Red Wolves than I feel saying Commanders.
Or just the Wolves. Why not just the Wolves?
I'm fine with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I also,
that's almost too cool. I almost don't want them to do that because of how good that would be for them. But
I liked I liked the Red Wolves idea because they could include the logo with the R. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you can have some, you know, connection to the history.
Maybe they
need
the distance from that, though, I think is the thing.
I mean, I get that. I get they cut the colors, but, like, this isn't like the Jaguars or the Panthers. Like, there is a storied football history here that, you know, like, that the name Commanders doesn't really acknowledge or whatever.
What about the Wolverines? The Washington Wolverines.
Super fan of that as well. I mean, miss me. I know there's people that are like, I liked the football team. No, it was dumb. Did not like that whatsoever. So, yeah. The Washington mixtapes. How about that?
No.
Why?
Does that mean we have to root for them?
That would be great SEO for us. So,
yeah, but then yeah. I don't know what that means for us at that point.
Okay, last thing, and then we'll get out of here. Ian Rappaport just tweeted, DeAndre Hopkins has hired Kelton Crenshaw of Clutch Sports to represent him in free agency.
Okay, so not that sketchy guy anymore.
He also represents Chase Young, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Devontae Smith. So there's a big NFC East flair there.
Yeah, I don't think the Eagles are signing him, by the way, because there's just not enough targets to go around for everyone to be happy, including him.
The Cowboys are the favorite, depending on what sports book you look at, and not that really matters or means anything.
I think for the same reason, they are also not going to sign him.
I mean,
it's not Madden. It's not fans. Like, guys have egos and they want their targets and they're not going to be happy. Do you know how many targets per game DeAndre Hopkins averages over his career?
Per game, I would put the over under at like 7.5.
It's like 9.7. Yeah. So he's going to have to take a ridiculously like lighter workload if he signs with the Eagles.
But he might. He might have what's his career high in touchdowns? I'm going to guess it's like 13. Know. I'm looking it up right now.
It's about targets. It's about volume. It's about putting up numbers because that's how you get
it's
paid.
Holy crap. It's 13. Shout out to me. But I mean, I think
it's not happening.
We'll see.
Unless I'm wrong and he just like is willing to take a lesser role, which I think is not really what's going on here. But unless I'm wrong about that, it's not happening for either team, to be clear. I'm not like trying to say, oh, it's not only happening for the Cowboys. It's not happening.
If he signs with the Cowboys or Eagles, and like I know people would make this argument about either
team. The Giants should sign him.
Well, if he signs with the Cowboys or Eagles, and I know people would make this argument to different extents about either team, but if he signs with one of those teams, that's the Super Bowl favorite on the NFC side. Like without a doubt. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
to be clear, yeah, I'm not saying they shouldn't in terms of like that'd be awesome. Like in a ridiculously stacked lineup for either side, but like I just don't see it realistically happening because he has a preference too. I'm telling you, he's gonna want to go somewhere where he's gonna get like big time targets, and it's not gonna be in Philly or Dallas.
It's gonna be something like super random. It's gonna just feel boring. Like the Cardinals. The Cardinals were that team. Like I remember vividly recording with Pete, and then JJ Watt tweeted out the photo of himself working out with the Cardinals shirt. And we were like, the Cardinals. Like it was so like flat and boring and whatever.
How about Jimmy Kemsky talked about this on the NFC's mixtape? How about a lot of people?
We are the NFC's mixtape. Jimmy Kemsky's never been on the NFC's mixtape.
BGN Radio.
That's a sore subject for a lot of people that he's never been on the NFC's
mixtape. I know. Well, it'll happen. Zach Ertz like wanted to go to the Cardinals, you know what I mean? Or at least wanted out of Philly. And now and at the time it was an upgrade, but now it's looking like a big time downgrade.
Isn't his wife from there? Like from the area? Like, and you know what I mean? Like there's some like non-football reasons for him.
She's from the West Coast, but still like, you know what I mean? But part of the reason he wanted to get traded is because the Eagles were perceived to be in this teardown mode and he wanted to go somewhere to win. And now he is looking at maybe the worst team in the NFL.
Zach Ertz
and Jonathan Gannon.
Zach Ertz, he definitely dropped that touchdown, but
No, he didn't. That's like I called that in the moment. I was like, he took three steps, so it doesn't even matter. And also, he re-caught the ball in the end zone.
It was a touchdown, but I remember like vividly thinking
he took
like
three steps.
I know. Look, to be clear, it was a touchdown, but my thought in the moment was like, I hate that. Like this is like a thought that I have. You know what I'm saying? That like this is not that this isn't like plain as day obvious. Like I hate that. But anyway,
I was never worried. I was like, that's I saw it live. I said he had three steps into the Ryan Van Bibber. Shout out to former SB Nation writer who was sitting next to me at the time. And I was like, that's definitely a touchdown. Anyway,
what was your question? So we can get out of here.
RJ, I want to hear three songs people should listen to. I was also thinking potentially if you don't have three, you could do one, I could do one, and then maybe Rachelle can throw one at the end.
Oh, I like that.
Rachelle, if you're listening to this, you can throw that in at the end with your because she's not here for the listeners.
Okay, so
in post
on the in the spirit of that, Rachel, I can't tell you everything because you're not a part of Monday Football Monday, so we have like our own special jokes. But part of it involves the Spice Girls. Jeremy Reisman knows what I'm talking about. And Rachel has a connection to the Spice Girls, so I'm going to go with Stop by the Spice Girls. That's my answer.
I'm going to say Reptilia by the Strokes.
Ooh, great, like beginning. That's a great call. Wow. What do we think? We can't guess Rachelle's. It's impossible.
I can't guess. I don't want to lead her a certain way either. Okay. Anything Rachelle wants to pick, and it is your homework, listeners, to listen to all those and give your feedback
in the order that we went to.
In the order, Stop,
and Reptilia, and then Rachelle's song TBD,
and use hashtag
songs.
No, you can't pick something so generic because then it gets lost in the shuffle.
Hashtag mixtape songs.
There you go.
Hashtag. Actually, that's probably that's really generic. Yeah. Yeah.
Hashtag mixtape listen along.
And maybe if you really want to like get in the vibe of what everything this show is, make an actual mixtape with the songs.
That's great. I mean, that's really, you're asking. How about to make a playlist on your phone? Maybe.
No, why not? I want a mixtape.
That's like mixtape. I mean, yeah, that's certainly like the A plus above and beyond.
Did we name this podcast the playlist? No. Yeah, that maybe would be the NFC East playlist. That would sound so stupid. Oh my gosh. Yeah, come on. I can't believe that's you want that.
It's not practical. We should build an NFC East mixtape playlist.
Well, these would be the first three songs on it, obviously.
Right.
Which, right. Ironically, the first one is called Stop, even though the goal is to go through all of them. So let's just say one final word.
One final word.
What's up, everyone? Rachel Privet here, and my song selection is Ain't It Fun by Paramore. Okay, bye.